Have you ever noticed how society treats fatness as the ultimate failure? While browsing through a bookstore recently, I stumbled upon Happy Fat by Sophie Hagen, a book that's been quietly revolutionizing how we think about bodies. This isn't just another body positivity manifesto, it's a radical reclamation of space in a world designed to make fat people invisible. Lizzo has cited it as influential to her own journey towards self-acceptance, and its impact has rippled through social media with the viral Happy Fat movement. What makes this book particularly powerful is Hagen's background as an award-winning comedian who transforms painful truths into accessible wisdom. In a culture obsessed with thinness, Hagen's unapologetic stance feels like both rebellion and relief, a permission slip to exist fully in whatever body you inhabit. I was a beautiful child. This simple affirmation becomes a powerful mantra throughout Sophie Hagen's narrative of growing up in a body that society deemed problematic from her earliest years. Despite being a happy, bright child with hazel brown eyes and a big smile, Hagen's childhood was marred by a healthcare system that pathologized her body and a family dynamic complicated by food. After her father left twice, once after her birth and again after fathering her sister, Hagen's mother struggled as a single parent with two children who represented opposite ends of the medical concern spectrum, one deemed too small, one too big. The contradictory medical advice created an impossible situation: feed one child full-fat foods while restricting the other. Food quickly became emotional currency, especially at her grandparents' house, where six meals daily and constant baking were the norm. The emotional manipulation around food was particularly damaging. Hagen's grandfather would use sweets as declarations of love, creating no-win situations where refusing ice cream she didn't want would result in dramatic sulking and emotional blackmail. I learned early that I couldn't listen to my body's signals without harming my grandfather's emotions, she writes. School compounded these issues, particularly physical education classes where cruelty was normalized. One PE teacher publicly humiliated Hagen by pulling down her pants when she claimed to have her period, forced her to shower while classmates watched, and even laughed when boys beat her with a baseball bat. These experiences taught her that her body was not only wrong, but deserved punishment. By her teenage years, Hagen was cycling through diets: Atkins, SlimFast, Weight Watchers, always starting Mondays with determination that eventually collapsed into binge eating and self-loathing. At 16, she was so desperate she deliberately tried to trigger bulimia, believing even an eating disorder seemed better than remaining fat. Her self-hatred transformed into misplaced anger toward thin people, until a school assignment forced her to consider that beauty standards harm everyone, albeit in different ways. What makes Hagen's narrative so compelling is her ability to connect personal experience to systemic issues. She helps us understand that beauty isn't objective, but subjectively defined through racist, classist, ableist, and sexist standards. Studies, she cites, reveal the depth of our collective body hatred. 89% of formerly fat people would choose blindness over regaining weight, and half would sacrifice a year of life to avoid fatness. Imagine looking into a funhouse mirror every day of your life and seeing only grotesque distortions of yourself, or worse, nothing at all. This is the reality for fat people consuming mainstream media. While thin people see countless possibilities reflected back at them, heroes, villains, lovers, leaders, fat people encounter either harmful stereotypes or complete erasure. When fat characters do appear, they're almost exclusively portrayed as unattractive, unintentionally funny, evil, lazy, unintelligent, or unwanted. Think of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Fat Monica in Friends, or the bumbling Hitchcock and Scully from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Even when fat characters receive more screen time, like Chrissy Metz in This Is Us, their entire storyline revolves around their weight. More often, they're simply erased completely, victims of what George Gerberner called symbolic annihilation in 1976, where absence from media signals that you don't matter. Stand-up comedy, Hagen's professional home, presents particular challenges. Comedy requires trust between performer and audience, but this trust is violated when comedians make fat people the butt of jokes. These jokes rely on tired stereotypes, fat people as lazy, unintelligent, pie eaters, and position them as them, not you, as if they couldn't possibly be in the room. The hypocrisy stings when comedians who mock fat bodies demand sympathy for their own insecurities. When Hagen tweeted, "We need a fat Disney princess," after watching a film with her cousin, she unleashed an unexpected firestorm. Thousands of hateful comments flooded in from trolls enraged that a fat woman dared to speak. They called her a lumbering whale, told her to lose weight, fat ass, and suggested she was cancerous for promoting unhealthy lifestyles to children. This wasn't about Disney at all, Hagen realizes. It was about silencing marginalized voices. Writers like Lindy West and Leslie Jones have abandoned Twitter after sustained abuse, while others like Mallory Blackman defiantly returned, refusing to be silenced by racists. Hollywood's lack of fat representation remains staggering. Even supposedly progressive shows like Aziz Ansari's Master of None feature endless versions of essentially the same thin woman while relegating fat people to punchlines. When Hagen encountered a book featuring a fat character who was intelligent, desired, and whose weight was merely incidental, it was revolutionary, especially the line describing her lover feeling wild joy at her weight on top of him. This single positive representation expanded her self-perception beyond appearance, highlighting why diverse representation matters so profoundly. Have you ever considered how public spaces might be inaccessible to fat people? Hagen vividly describes a particularly urgent bathroom situation during an important meeting. After eating a burrito for breakfast, her stomach rebelled against this spicy morning choice. The toilet was placed in a narrow alcove with barely enough room to sit. When she finished, she realized there wasn't enough space to reach between her thighs to wipe. She tried various acrobatic positions, smashing her elbows and knees into walls, while people nearby likely questioned her digestive health. This experience highlights a common problem. Sometimes public spaces simply don't accommodate larger bodies. Many fat people have faced situations where they couldn't use public bathrooms properly. The debate about whether fat people should accommodate themselves to the world or vice versa continues, though Hagen's stance is clear. An inclusive world is better for everyone. Flying presents another major challenge. Plane seats have shrunk from 19 to 20 inches 30 years ago to 16-17 inches today, purely to increase profits. Hagen describes her anxiety about flying, preferring window seats to minimize interaction, and the physical pain of being squeezed into two small spaces. On one 11-hour flight, an armrest dug so painfully into her flesh that she cried with relief during her seatmate's bathroom breaks when she could briefly lift it. She's reached the point where she must request seatbelt extensions without shame, though flight attendants often act embarrassed. On a recent flight to Berlin, she was moved from an emergency exit row because she needed an extension, shocking her thin friends who hadn't realized the constant accommodations fat people must make. Dina Amland, an activist with the Danish group FedFront, adds historical context by dismantling the myth that fatness was celebrated in earlier times. From ancient Greece onward, slenderness has consistently been the ideal. The earliest corsets originated in Crete, and throughout medieval times, fatness was associated with gluttony, one of the seven deadly sins. Even the term Rubenesque is misleading, as Rubens' models were mostly slender or small fat at most. The myth of fat acceptance in olden days serves either to portray fat people as outdated relics or to falsely minimize the historical depth of fat phobia. For years, Hagen never considered what clothes she actually liked wearing, having always settled for whatever fit her size 26-28 frame. After years of wearing uncomfortable, ill-fitting clothes she disliked, she discovered trousers at age 28 and finally began exploring her identity through clothing. Hagen envies the orange lady she spotted at a bar, a woman dressed entirely in orange, whose distinctive style impressed her while completely eluding her date. This encounter made Hagen realize she'd never developed her personal style due to limited options. fat women face unique pressure to appear ultra-feminine and put together to counter stereotypes of laziness, while thin women can dress casually without judgment. Hagen recounts her transformative moment of self-discovery when she abandoned dresses for trousers and men's vests, finally seeing herself in the mirror and saying, "There you are." She explains how fat women are expected to embrace ultra-femininity to compensate for being desexualized by society, noting that plus-size clothing is overwhelmingly flowery and cute as a form of apology. The near-impossible task of finding clothes above size 32 remains a challenge, with even inclusive brands rarely offering larger sizes despite claiming to cater to all bodies. Hagen highlights how this limitation isn't just inconvenient, it's a form of erasure that prevents fat people from fully expressing their identities. Summer brings additional challenges with its emphasis on bikini body ready messaging, which Hagen condemns as simply a coded way of saying, "Do not dare show your fat body in a bikini, you lard monster," disguised with bright imagery of thin women promoting diet products or fitness centers. She firmly rejects this concept, suggesting the phrase should only be used if one literally means putting a bikini on one's body, and even then, only if you similarly announce jacket body or pajamas body when donning other garments. Society portrays fat people as desexual beings, either sexually aggressive or without sexuality altogether. This harmful stereotype leads to horrific attitudes, like when Hagen's fat friend who was raped was told he should be grateful someone wanted to fuck him, or when a man told Hagen, "If you weren't so fat, I'd rape you." Against this dehumanizing backdrop, Hagen asserts proudly, "Fat people are not desexual. Fat people fuck." She's had sex with various partners in multiple locations, yet talks about these experiences extensively because her sexuality is so purposefully ignored by society. "I realized I express my sexuality loudly because it's denied, like my femininity, emotional complexity, and political viewpoints. I'm shouting into existence what society refuses to acknowledge." After repeated cruel experiences with men, from nightclub games targeting fat women to public humiliation, Hagen developed deep distrust when men flirted with her. Even after intimate encounters, she'd anxiously await the revelation that it was all a joke. The hypocrisy was evident when she heard a comedian joke about fat women only pulling after 3 a.m. in clubs. The same man who had invited her to his candlelit apartment at 7 p.m. made love to her and begged her to stay for breakfast. The big fat friend trope pervades modern culture, from fat Monica in Friends to pickup artist techniques. This harmful stereotype casts fat people as unfuckable annoyances at parties, obstacles to be managed while pursuing their thin friends. This dynamic can breed jealousy between friends, despite neither wanting this competition. Kevon Bay, a trans man interviewed in the book, adds important perspective on the intersection of fatness and gender. He notes the fascinating shift in how his fatness is perceived. When seen as a woman, his fat was considered masculinizing, but as a man, it's seen as feminizing. He observes that fatness makes people less of what they're supposed to be in society's eyes. At 15, Hagen joined a weight loss group where a nutritionist's casual remark that bananas are bad for you triggered a middle-aged man to punch a wall and scream at his wife about eating only bananas for breakfast for 6 months. This frustration reflects our collective obsession with thinness. Hagen tried harder to lose weight than to pass exams or win love, saying no to parties, friends, and feeling alive for over a decade. As a teenager, Sunday evenings were filled with hopeful diet planning with her mother. They'd fantasize about her future thinness, tape before photos to the fridge, and purge the kitchen of anything containing taste. The first days were exhilarating. Hunger felt like progress. She'd declined social invitations to stay home with her carrots and water. Inevitably, within days or weeks, she'd crash, binge uncontrollably, then spiral into self-loathing. "Why am I so weak? I'm disgusting." Research shows this pattern is nearly universal. Studies of the Biggest Loser contestants revealed that 13 of 14 regained all their weight, with metabolism permanently slowed. According to Health at Every Size research, dieting slows metabolism, increases hunger, reduces energy, and alters fat storage enzymes. With only a 0.8% chance of an obese woman reaching normal weight and 95 to 98% of diets failing, the cycle isn't your fault. It's by design. Diet companies profit when you blame yourself, lose weight temporarily, then return for another attempt. Weight loss surgery, often suggested by doctors as casually as waiters offer bread, comes with serious risks. 1 to 5% die during surgery, and 20% require follow-up operations for complications. Complications include dumping syndrome, affecting 40% of patients, with rapid food passage, nausea, cramping, difficulty eating during pregnancy, and increased rates of substance abuse and self-harm emergencies following surgery. Diet pills are equally problematic. Rimonabant, an anti-obesity drug approved in Europe in 2006 but banned worldwide by 2008, showed users were twice as likely to have suicidal thoughts, with three participants actually killing themselves during clinical trials. As Naomi Wolf writes in The Beauty Myth, a culture fixated on female thinness is not an obsession about female beauty, but an obsession about female obedience. Dieting is the most potent political sedative in women's history. A quietly mad population is a tractable one. One evening, while relaxing in her pajamas, eating pasta, and chatting with her flatmate, Hagen was confronted by his friend, who immediately launched into an unsolicited lecture. Having once been fat himself, he claimed to know everything about fatness, insisting it was unhealthy and would kill her soon. He interrupted repeatedly when she tried to respond with scientific evidence, dismissing studies he hadn't personally read. The author addresses the common question of whether being fat is unhealthy by examining scientific research that contradicts popular beliefs. She highlights how McGinnis and Foge's research on diet and activity patterns was misattributed to obesity in media headlines. Studies show that up to 35% of fat people are metabolically healthy, and that physical activity and healthy lifestyle habits decrease mortality regardless of BMI. The author addresses fatness and poor health is oversimplified, driven partly by weight loss industry funding of research. Obesity researcher Dr. David Allison published a study claiming 300,000 annual obesity-related deaths, later inflated to 400,000. This study was eventually debunked, with revised estimates showing fewer than 26,000 deaths attributable to obesity, 15 times lower than the original claim. When questioned, Allison admitted these were just back-of-the-envelope, plausible scenarios, never meant to be precise. The author reveals Allison had received funding from 148 weight loss industry companies, including Weight Watchers and SlimFast. Medical bias presents perhaps the greatest health risk to fat people. Two-thirds of doctors believe overweight patients lack self-control. 39% consider obese patients lazy. 49% of nurses feel uncomfortable working with fat patients, and 24% admit being repulsed by them. Most shockingly, studies show fatter patients are more likely to have surgical instruments left inside them during operations. The author recounts her own traumatic doctor's visit where she sought contraception but was dismissed, triggering a brief eating disorder relapse. She cites numerous cases of fat people with serious medical conditions, like massive tumors, whose doctors missed diagnoses because they only focused on weight loss. Studies show fat women delay seeking medical care due to fear of discrimination, and this medical bias may contribute to health problems typically blamed on fatness itself. Learning to love your body is incredibly difficult, perhaps harder than climbing Mount Everest, because it requires complete rewiring after lifelong conditioning. Unlike diet books that promise happiness through restriction, Hagen promises that loving your fat body will bring genuine joy, autonomy, and confidence, with the added benefit that you can eat whatever you want without guilt or shame. The journey to self-love begins with unlearning everything society has taught you about fatness. Like throwing diet food in a dumpster and pouring soap over it, you must discard society's beauty standards completely. Once you recognize fat phobia, you'll see it everywhere, in casual compliments about weight loss, magazine headlines, and the absence of fat characters in media. The first crucial step is accepting that being fat isn't bad. Society has implanted a voice telling us fat equals bad, but this equation is fundamentally wrong. Fat simply describes a body that's rounder and softer than others. It's neutral. Owning this word was Hagen's most important step towards self-love. By reclaiming fat and stripping it of negative connotations, she transformed a weapon used against her into something empowering. Daily affirmations, though awkward at first, actually work. Write down your insecurities honestly, then transform each negative statement into a positive one. My thighs are gross becomes my thighs are wonderful. Say these affirmations regularly, even when it feels like lying. You're speaking to the child version of yourself who was taught to hate their body before they could even speak. Exposure to fat bodies helps normalize them. Look up projects like the Adipose Positivity Project, where photographers capture nude photos of glorious fat people. Make these images your wallpaper, get calendars, surround yourself with fat bodies until they become normal. Eliminate anything that makes you feel bad about yourself from your social media. Unfollow, unfriend, hide, block, and mute every account that triggers negative feelings about yourself. This isn't petty, it's self-protection. Then, actively fill your feeds with fat people doing everything: sports, fashion, science, art, comedy, yoga. Break fat person rules. Don't wear crop tops. Don't eat fast food in public. Always signal your shame. These rules are illusions, prison bars you can walk right through. When you break them, you might face stares or comments, but you'll feel empowered. Kill your inner thinny, that idealized future self who's happier and has everything you want. As long as thin you remains a possibility, it's difficult to accept your fatness. Live your life as if you'll have this body forever, because then you start living for the real you, not an imaginary future version. Despite fat phobia affecting everyone, asking for allyship feels uncomfortable when fat people already feel they take up too much space. Thin privilege means not experiencing discrimination in everyday situations, like fitting into seats or buying clothes in stores. Acknowledging this privilege helps recognize how much space to take up and how one might have inadvertently talked over fat people or made decisions that negatively affected them. Fat people experience gaslighting daily when others refuse to acknowledge their physical reality, being told they could fit into spaces or clothes when they couldn't, or having their perception denied when people say, "You'll be fine," about chairs that ultimately broke under their weight. This constant invalidation leads fat people to doubt their instincts and perception. Society either acknowledges fatness negatively or erases it completely. The coded language people use, like pretty face or great personality, attempts to ignore fat bodies, and euphemisms, curvy, voluptuous, plus size, avoid the word fat. Microaggressions like "you have such a pretty face" or "have you lost weight" harm fat people, and even self-proclaimed allies make fatphobic comments. Thin allies should amplify fat voices, call out fatphobic comments rather than just texting fat friends about what happened, and take concrete actions. Boycott venues that aren't fat accessible, avoid restaurants with restrictive seating, don't buy from clothing stores with plus sizes, and pressure businesses to change. The fight against fat phobia isn't just personal, it's systemic. Our capitalist system profits from making us hate ourselves. Companies sell product to fix problems they've convinced us we have. We blame ourselves for not fitting into airplane seats rather than questioning why seats are too small. This system values profit over children's safety and mental health. Walking home one summer evening, Hagen was verbally abused by two young men who called her a fat cunt and added, "I wouldn't even fucking touch it." Instead of her usual reaction, ignoring it and processing later, something snapped. She burst into uncontrollable, bellowing laughter. These men verbally abused her because of their own insecurities, believing fat people deserve mockery and women should be submissive. She realized the opposite of cowering and shame is laughing loudly. While individual journeys towards self-acceptance are important, we must shift focus to dismantling the systems that teach hate. When two 12-year-old girls emailed Hagen stating matter-of-factly, "When you are 12 years old, you hate your body," it confirmed we can no longer focus solely on individuals. We must work toward freeing fat people everywhere from discrimination, objectification, and abuse. Fat people deserve better.